Well, good morning, everyone. Let's take our Bibles. Let's turn to Joshua chapter 6 this morning. Joshua chapter 6. This morning, we look at Joshua chapter 6. We come to a story that is one of the hallmark stories of children's ministry. I remember in sharing these stories over the years with children and hearing these stories for the first time and the excitement that comes from hearing a story like this. Now, I want you to know that some of the details of these Old Testament Bible stories just seem too good to be true. When children hear these stories for the first time, I remember sharing the story here at the church with the story of Jonah and the whale, Jonah the big fish. And one of the kids looked up at me and said, "You have got to be kidding me. There is no way there was a fish that would swallow a man." But I call to your attention, if you've ever been to the North Carolina coast and you've ever waded out into that water, you do know that in that water there are creatures that are large enough to swallow you, and they want to swallow you. And I think about that every time I step in the water. I don't want to go out too far, because I don't want to be Jonah part two. But we come to Joshua chapter 6. We look at Joshua chapter 6 and we see the story of walls crumbling at Jericho. We think about Jericho, and it is an old city, yes. And it doesn't surprise us sometimes when old structures crumble. But I want you to know that the way that God defeats Jericho defies conventional wisdom. So this morning, when we look at Joshua chapter 6 and the walls of Jericho falling, you got to remember, Israel has behind their backs momentum. They have seen the Lord work, and they have seen the Lord do much in their midst as God is leading them into the promised land. They are now moving from the wilderness. They've crossed the Jordan River. They have renewed their covenant, and now they are making their conquest into Jericho. And like I said last week, as I was telling you the story about my little niece that started playing in Little League, it is so easy to stay excited and to play on a team that's winning. I never had that luxury of being an athlete that was on a winning team. I don't know if it's because I was on the team or if it was just the way it worked, but someone had to be in last place. And I remember our coach trying to cheer us up once in Little League, and he said, "Listen, somebody has got to be in last place. And when you look at our standings, there is nobody even close to us." And I thought to myself, we are winning at losing, and that sounds like a fun place to be. But it was demoralizing playing in games when you knew you had no chance of winning. But for Israel, that's not the case. As a matter of fact, Israel's going to have to assess what normal looks like. They are going to have to lay down their weapons in order to fight a battle that's won through worship. Now, that is not the normal scenario. We don't hear about superpowers around the world building up their armies in a spiritual sense of bowing down and worshiping God. No, we hear about arsenals that are built up with people that want to see through their military might how accomplished and how awesome they are. And so it is not normal. I want you to understand, it is not normal in this world to see a display like we're going to look at Joshua chapter 6 and see God work through worship rather than through weapons. But before we get there, I'd like us to get on the Jericho road. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about Jericho, the city itself. Here we have a depiction of what the city must have looked like. You see two structures. Jericho is probably one of the oldest cities in the world, and because of Jericho and because of its what it has, Jericho has a water supply. In a desert environment, in a desert community, having a water supply is desirable. But beyond having a water supply, Jericho was known for its great walls. How big were those walls? Actually, if you and I were to go to Jericho today, we could see the establishment of the old city. It's not a really large place. It's about 600 meters in diameter. And let me put this into perspective to you so that you can imagine what it would be like to look at the city of Jericho, at least the old part with the old walls. If we were to walk out of our church and head down to Linwood Cemetery, that's about the distance that we're talking about. Of course, you're talking about a radius or a diameter, so you'd have to go up Main Street and you'd have to go down Main Street. But if you and I were to get up to try to walk around the city walls, it would probably take us about an hour to do so if we're walking at a reasonable pace. And so to make it completely around the city, I'm trying to be gracious here, because I know not every one of us walks at the same rate or the same speed. And if you can just imagine coming to look at the city walls as Joshua has looked at Jericho, he spied it out. Remember last week who he met when he was on that mission? He met the captain of the host of the Lord's army. And it is also at Jericho that when the walls fell, there is still a section that is standing in the northern part. We know from the account that we're going to look at today that Rahab's family was spared there because of her graciousness and in her sacrifice in helping the spies escape. As we look at Jericho and we look at what God is going to do at Jericho, I want to tell you this morning that we should not worry, because the battle is the Lord's. Let's go to Him in prayer at this time and ask Him to bless our time together. Lord Jesus, we come to You this morning and we lift up Your name and we magnify Your name. And Lord, as we defy conventional wisdom, we see from Joshua chapter 6 the importance of our worship. We understand how You had called Israel to trust wholly in You, and how it would defy conventional wisdom that a city would fall, not because Israel was such a skilled and accomplished army, but because You are such a great and awesome God. And I pray, Lord, this morning, that if there are walls in our life, that You, the wall shaker, the wall taker down, that You would give us freedom and liberty from the places that we try to find refuge, when we know there is no better place to be than in Your presence. We ask these things in Your name. Amen. This morning, as we look at Joshua chapter 6, when the walls fell, I want you to look with me at Joshua chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. As we look at our scriptures this morning, we find, now Jericho was straitly shut up because the children of Israel, none went out and none came in. You remember, the word had gotten out about what God had been doing with the camp of Israel, how He was moving them across the river. And as the kings and as the armies of the region were starting to rally and starting to worry about what they were going to be coming up against, Jericho's inhabitants had retreated inside the city walls. Nobody went out and nobody came in. We find in verse 2, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, See, I have given into thy hand Jericho, and the king thereof, and the mighty men of valor. And ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And the 7 priests shall bear before thee the ark, 7 trumpets of ram's horns. And the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all of the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat. The people shall ascend up every man straight before him." Wow. What a strategy. But before we look at what God does at Jericho, I want to go back and invite you to join me in considering what Jericho means for Israel and the challenge that Israel has as she marches to battle with the Lord's directions. Because Israel has just spent 40 years in the wilderness. And God has met their need. God has taken care of them with daily provisions. We found out last week as we looked that Israel had let her guard down and had missed out on a lot of what she was supposed to be doing in covenant keeping. But the challenge that we have here when we look at entering into the promised land, I want to ask you, what would you consider to be the greater blessing? Arriving into the promised land and getting the land that God promised your forefathers? I mean, that sounds like wonderful. God said it would happen, and he has led Israel here, and now they are going to get personal property. I want to tell you the problem with personal property, because I spent a lot of this week cutting up trees in my yard. For those of you who have driven by and have wondered why it looks like there's a war zone there, it's because there was a war zone. And trees fell over the last year. And they fell a lot faster than it takes to get them up. Just Friday night, I was getting ready to burn up another little batch of branches, and I put the wood on the fire, which had been going up. Just amazing how fast things were burning up. And as I put that on the fire, the wind started to blow and howl as that storm started to come through on Friday night. And rather than the fire taking off, all I was doing was choking down that fire. And I thought, well, Lord, you got strong winds, and I know when it comes to fires that you got to have sparks, and you got to have fuel, and you got to have a source, and there's a log that's been burning there for 3 days. There is some branches here that are dry and ready to burn, and there is plenty of wind. Why in the world won't this fire take off? In my defense, I took everything off the fire, took it off the pile, scattered it around my yard, put it back to where it looked like it was, so I feel a little bit better about coming back out to the war zone whenever I can get to a place where it's dry and where I can start to burn again. I just couldn't figure out. It just defied wisdom. Everything was supposed to be working. There were hard winds blowing, and it finally felt good Friday night to be out working with all that hard wind, but that fire just would not take off. And I'll tell you, the problem with personal property is it can really bog you down, and it can really get you to a place where you think, oh, there's just so much to take care of around here. Am I speaking to the choir on this one? Or, I mean, is there anybody else that feels that way, that having property has a lot of upkeep that comes with it? But it is nice to have, and it is nice to see the blessing that God has promised to Israel, for them to have this promised land. But I think the greater blessing for Israel isn't just that they are getting their promised land, but that God is in their midst and he's leading them every day. You remember back in, we looked at Joshua chapter 1 when the series started out, how the Lord told Joshua that everywhere you walk will belong to you. Look with me at Joshua chapter 1 verse 3. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. What was the criteria? Anywhere you set your foot, I will give that to you. And I want you to keep in mind that the motif here of a foot, because we find that the conquest against Jericho was going to be fought on foot. And God tells Israel, anywhere you go. And he outlined the borders in Joshua chapter 1. We find Israel didn't take the full borders that God had described. But anywhere you go, that's what I'm going to give you. Because this land is the land that I have given you, God tells Israel. And he also tells them that the enemies will not stand a chance in Joshua 1:5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. His eye was with Moses. So I will be with thee, I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. God also says, I am the God who goes with you, in Joshua 1:9. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage, be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. And then we come to Joshua chapter 5 that we looked at last week, when he meets the captain of the host of the Lord's army. And the words were, remove your shoes because you're standing on holy ground. Joshua 5:15. And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose thy shoe from thy foot, for the place whereupon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. I think that's consequential. That God has told Israel that they would have the land boundaries as far as their foot was going to walk, take them. And that the Lord tells them in his presence, take off your shoe, because you're standing on holy ground. And I want you to know, the land that God promised to Israel was holy, because it was his gift to them. And for them to understand that the foot was going to be just as important as the heart, because God was with them. And we look at Joshua chapter 6, and we come to a really abnormal plan for victory over Jericho. And this plan was going to be something that you could describe. If you ever heard the story, you know it was simply to walk in silence each day for 6 days, once around the city, about an hour. And then on that final day, that seventh day, seven laps, and then a shout on day seven. So if it takes about an hour each day of the week, on that seventh day, on that Sabbath day, it's going to be 7 hours of walking around the city without a noise. Now, I know something about God's people, and it is really hard for us not to murmur. It's really hard for us not to complain when things are, moments and circumstances are difficult. And for 1 hour, I think you and I agree, that doesn't sound like an unreasonable demand. Walk around the city for 1 hour and not complain. Don't even make a peep. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be inside of Jericho as the people inside the city stood on the walls and looked down? Some places of Jericho, they said the walls were about 30 feet thick, as is evidenced as people living inside the walls. And as they looked over the top, I wonder what they were thinking. What in the world's going on down there? Why in the world are they marching around? Why are they being quiet? It's not normal to be quiet. They're just walking around our cities. What are they looking for? You have to imagine the panic that's going on the people of Jericho on that first day. The second day, that problem's still probably there. Oh no, they're back, and they're walking, and they're being quiet. There's nothing that terrifies me more than when people are silent, because you don't know what they're thinking. And sometimes I wish people would stay silent, because I don't want to know what you're thinking. But this goes on for 6 days. Can you imagine by the sixth day, oh, there's that crazy army walking around the city, looking at us and not saying a word. And then that seventh day, hey, they didn't stop. They're walking around. They've got the ark of the Lord following behind them. Why do those priests have those trumpets? What in the world's going on here today? Things look a little bit different. They've made 2 laps, 3 laps, 4 laps. You got to remember, you're talking about the span of 7 hours. And I'll tell you, 7 hours of grueling agony trying to figure out what's going on can certainly be overwhelming. And then what happens? At the end of that last lap, the horns are blown, God's people shout out, and the walls fall down. And I know what you're thinking, because I've thought it too. When you hear the story of Joshua fighting the Battle of Jericho, it just sounds too good to be true. And I'm going to outline some problems as to why that is. First problem, we build walls to hide behind, to protect us, to get away from problems. And the reason why Jericho is one of the oldest established cities is because its walls provided a great defense, a place that you could go and find refuge and hide behind. And for Jericho, with a wall that's impassable and impenetrable, you trust in the walls because they've met your needs. It probably wasn't until gunfire or gunpowder and cannons that we began to see the problems with walls, because you could punch right through them. And nowadays we have weapons that can fall and can just obliterate cities. But for the most part, when you think about a wall, it's a place that you go to hide behind. And the second problem, that it normally, under normal conditions, it means that you're safe when you're on the inside of the wall, such as the people of Jericho. For years, that wall had protected them. There were people living in the walls, and we find Rahab lets the spies out over the wall. And we think about the safety inside of Jericho. Sounds like it's a great place to be. But there's a problem here, because walls tend to mean safety, and that's not what happens in Joshua chapter 6. The walls fall down, and the city's utterly destroyed. And another problem, and this is a big one, the wall fell without a fight. I mentioned gunpowder and cannonballs and weapons, but when you look at the military strategy for what happened at Jericho, the walls fell without a fight. People walking around on foot, holding their peace. And then on that seventh day, they shout, and the walls fall without a fight. And I think this is a problem. Because you can try to explain it away or engineer it away. Well, maybe the people walked around the city walls for so long, and they weakened the structure of the ground. And they kind of, you know, the walking and the trampling certainly had to create a crack or had to create some kind of problems. Maybe that's what happened. But I want you to know that this is God working through his people and them trusting that he's going to meet their need and he's going to deliver them, and that the walls fell without a fight is not a testimony of Joshua's skill, but of what God can do. And then the problem number four, if you and I were to go to Jericho, the evidence that's there at the city wall is if they've been excavating it, is the walls appear to have fallen from the top down. They crumbled in on themselves. They fell from the top down. Well, maybe all the people got on top of the city and they overwhelmed it and it just couldn't hold up all that weight and it fell down. I think when God pushed pressure on that wall, the walls collapsed from the top down. Rather than your foundation, the foundation at my house, cracking and crumbling, this wall fell down from the top side, the roof side, down to the ground. And there was another problem, that in the midst of all of this destruction, God had promised protection for Rahab because of her commitment to the spies. And they were to destroy everything, but not to destroy Rahab. And I think when you've got a city wall collapsing and an army taking spoils, it'd be really easy in the confusion as the rubble's falling, as the dust is settling, just to wipe out everybody. But let's look at Joshua chapter 6, verse 17. And the city shall be accursed, even it, and all that are therein to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, and she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that were sent. Remember the promise that was struck when the spies went into the city to check out the city, how she protected them, and because of that commitment. And we know from Joshua's account that Rahab was taken into Israel. Her story continued because of her commitment to God's people. But that Rahab would be spared in the midst of all that confusion. And another problem that I have with the city, which is not really a problem, just pointing out the issue here, that the Israelites were told to destroy all the spoils as an act of worship. Everything inside the city that had value was to be destroyed. Look at verse 18 with me. And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourselves accursed when ye take of the accursed thing, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. And there was a problem that for Israel to want to go into the city and to take some souvenirs. I think that's just natural, normal for us. When you've seen God work in a mighty big way, when the city walls fell, you want to have something to keep that you can remember that big moment by. But the problem for Israel and why God wanted Israel to destroy all of the possessions and everything of worth inside the city that he hadn't consecrated is that Israel was going to face a challenge that would plague them throughout her story. It was Israel admitting, you know what? All of these wonderful things and all of this livestock and all of these people and all of the possessions they have, they are going to entice us to quit trusting in God and start trusting in our stuff and our property, in their property that we now have. And we will destroy it. We will not be ensnared by these Canaanite values. and we will not absorb their wickedness into our camp. And that's the problem for Israel that she has a problem with. That Israel begins to start to take on throughout the as we look in the book of Judges, as we look at their story, Israel begins to take on the problems of the inhabitants of the land, and they like it. And we see that Israel absorbing this wickedness really does begin to affect her relationship with God, because what becomes more important to her is the stuff and the blessings of stuff rather than the presence of God. And it's not until the oppressors rise up in the book of Joshua and book of Judges that we see Israel crying out to God to deliver them. But if she just could keep this lesson straight, God, we don't want to take on their values, and we do not want to take this wickedness into our camp. Another problem that we see as we look at verse 19 was that Israel was not to take any trophies for herself. In fact, God didn't destroy everything in the city, as evidenced by Rahab and her family. God had set aside all the silver and all the gold and the vessels of brass and iron. They are consecrated unto the Lord, for they shall come into the treasury of the Lord. And it's interesting to consider when we think about the promised land, as Israel's marching into the promised land, God's message to Israel was to wipe out the Canaanites because of the influence and the effect that they would have on Israel's relationship with God. But God did not want Israel to utterly destroy everyone. It was just those enemies standing in Israel's way of receiving the promised land. And that we find here at Jericho that there were some items that were supposed to be consecrated unto the Lord. And I want you to think, when you got an old wore out goat or a nice vessel of brass or silver or gold, it'd really be tempting to want to have one of those nice objects, something that you could have on your mantelpiece. But God said, listen, those don't belong to you. They belong to me. So no trophies on your part, because I give you this land and I am your God. And so really the problems that we look at are some considerations that we need to have for Israel. That the story defines conventional wisdom. That there is not normal a military strategy where people just walk around and walls fall down. But the walls do fall as promised. And so today I'd like to offer a little bit of correction about that Sunday school song that you probably grew up singing. Joshua did not fight the battle of Jericho. Who did? God himself. Joshua chapter 6 verse 27. So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was noised throughout all the country. And because of Joshua and because of his leadership, as the word came out about Joshua and the children of Israel, can you imagine what it must have been like sitting around one of those Canaanite Sunday dinners as people were talking, as they thought, well, did you hear what happened in Jericho? Joshua, the children of Israel, just walked around that city, the walls fell, and they destroyed it. Well, they spared that Rahab, the harlot, but the city fell. What does that mean for us? Should we be on the run? Should we be on the move? We should really be scared. And I point your attention so that the Lord was with Joshua. And that's important to remember, that Joshua didn't do this in his own strength. It was through the might of the Lord. And the greater lesson in Joshua chapter 6 is knowing that walls do not stand against God, especially when his promises are being fulfilled. But you know, I can't help but think about the way we live our lives and what we do as people. We take the counter strategy. We like to build walls to hide behind. We enjoy hedging off portions of our life that are private and unknown by other people. We like to hide our problems behind walls that we build up. And that's dangerous, because as people, we think that the walls that we build are going to offer us safety and protection from our secrets getting out, from our problems getting out. Last week, we talked about why it was that Israel probably stopped in her covenant practices in the wilderness. Remember, we talked about they were probably they could have been angry at God because he had brought them all that way and he would let them go into the promised land. And here they were just complaining and grumbling, and they were just angry at God because he had brought them to this place of misery that they found themselves. Or maybe it was for fear that it was the children of Israel thinking, you know what, the inhabitants of the land, they're giants, they're pretty big. And we've seen them once, we know things haven't changed a lot, and God, I know that you can do a lot, but these people are pretty big and we should be scared of them. So just leave us to ourselves, and we're trying to sort through these problems ourselves. Probably for Israel, she was in a backslidden state. She knew what she needed to do was right. She chose to do what was wrong. And that gets us in trouble every time. But the answer clearly is their unbelief is the reason why they stopped keeping covenant, and the reason that they would think that they would be able to take the city walls with weapons is because it would be natural for a person to think that, hey, our army, we should trust in our army. But I call these attention to you because these are the same motivations that we have when we build walls up in our life, because we're angry, because life didn't turn out the way it was supposed to, that this is not the way it was supposed to play out, or because we're scared because of the way circumstances have played out, and we don't know what to do, and we just want to retreat to a place where we feel like the world can't touch us, or we're out of trouble. Or because we're backslidden and we think that God can't see behind our walls, which is wrong. And every time we build walls because of unbelief, God, I know that my relationship with you is open, but there's some areas of my life I just don't want you to touch. I like things the way they are. When you consider how the walls fell at Jericho, they fell by foot, but I want you to know for Israel that day came down to the trouble with Jericho and Joshua, the real battle was going to be in their hearts. Paul writes of this in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. And the struggle that we have when we build up these walls and these strongholds in our life, sometimes we give the devil an inch and he takes a mile. We build up, find ourselves trapped inside these walls. We just can't get away from them. But I want you to know that we build the walls brick by brick, thinking that our problems are isolated, that no one will know about this. Yeah, God does, but no one will know about this. And I want you to know the struggle that Israel had that day are the same struggles that you and I have right now. Worship over warfare. God, I know you want me to trust you, but I've just got to insert myself and give you a hand. I've got to try to do a little bit more to try to right this wrong, because I don't feel like you're moving fast enough, God, and I think I know better here. When all along, as God said to Israel and to Joshua, trust me, this is the land that I've given you, and I am with you. And the struggle that we find for Israel is a struggle that we have today. The way that we have victory defies conventional wisdom. Because if you think about living your best life now and what the world has to offer and the pleasures and the enticements of sin, that leaves us empty every time. That the real way that victory is won in a believer's life is through our spiritual surrender to a holy God. And if you've got those issues and those walls built up in your life, it's time to surrender the stronghold. Because it comes down to an issue of my strength over God's sufficiency. I think, Lord, I know what you're doing and I know what you can do. But God, you just need to let me wrestle with this for a while. I've got to make some sense of this, and I've got to work through this issue. And God, You just got to leave me alone about it because I'm not quite ready to give it up. You know, I find that's a real challenge that people have when they've got dependency issues or when people are trying to break that cycle of addiction is we try to do it in our own strength. Well, you know what? I can lay it down. I can lay it down when I'm good and ready. And the reason I haven't laid it down is because I'm not ready. I remember in my life as a young man hearing family members say, I promise you I'll stop doing this. I promise you I'll walk away from that, but I'm not quite ready to give it up. But I can do it whenever I get ready. And all the while, after that short cycle of giving it up, oh, it's just too easy to slip back into it and to go back to what you want to do. I can go do it in privacy and keep it from you. And as I would hear a family member promise me something that they had would not do anymore, and then I walk in and they're doing that exact same thing. Broke my heart as a young man. And it broke my confidence in their word as a young man. But do not think that we have the strength to conquer sin, because we don't. That battle is won in our heart by God's sufficiency, who tells us, I give you everything that you need, as he told Israel. And for the city walls as they fell, and Israel was not to leave anything of what most people would consider value except for what God said was valuable. God says, why in the world would you look for satisfaction apart from me? And yet, I hear just all the time somebody saying, well, you know, I tried it, and it just didn't meet my need. I tried it for a little while, but, you know, at the end of the day, I just want to go back and do what I want to do because life seems to be short. And we hear about people with substance abuse problems that their life ends shortly because of the problem and simply just giving it up. And I want you to know that the problems that we're up against, we can't take them on in our own strength. But we remember what God told Israel repeatedly, I have given you this land and I am your God. The lesson we look at Joshua chapter 6, we see that only God defeats the strongholds that we take refuge in. Yeah, Israel was quiet so they could see God work. But he promised them, everywhere your foot walks, I will give you that land. And as they marched around that city, we have a clear object lesson for Israel. You have walked around this city, and God says, I give you this city. So here's our response. Remember, Joshua chapter 6 reminds us the battle is the Lord's. And just like Jericho thought they were safe and impervious, you cannot hide behind a wall. Let me give you three things that you can go and do right now in order to see that wall fall. Starts with admitting your fault. As you realize, you come to that place, the walls that I live behind are walls that I have built. God, you didn't put these walls up. Maybe it's a relationship issue. Maybe it's a problem that you think nobody else knows about. And maybe we don't know about problems. But you have to identify who had the blueprints for building that wall in the first place. And we need to own up to our problem and admit your fault. And secondly, once you get past that, and that's a big obstacle, you've got to commit to the cost of demolition. I can remember family members pouring out bottles of liquor, saying, I won't go back to that. And then it came down to that last bottle. Well, I'll just save that. I'll save that bottle for a special occasion. Rather than get rid of it, I'll just save it here. And before long, the old patterns were the new patterns. And if you're going to see the wall come down, you've got to commit to the cost of demolition. God, not allowing anything in my heart to come between you and me is what I want to do. So God, take this all. I'm at fault here. And Lord, would you bring down the walls? Lord, I'm not going to keep back a little portion for myself. I don't want to take value in something that I shouldn't take value in. I shouldn't hide it away from myself, but I should just give it all over to you. And I give it over all to you, God, right here and right now. And I think something that happens for us as believers is sometimes we forget about the success of God's redemption in our lives. The power of repentance that God gives us, the strength and the courage to live out. God, I turn from my sin towards you. And I pray, God, that you would write this and keep me from returning to that. Once you've admitted the walls, once you've admitted the cost, once you've admitted the sin, once you commit to the cost, watch the wall fall from the top down as God frees you from the strongholds in your life. And for Israel, it would be victory in their heart of faith. And it would be victory, as God said, let not the book of the law depart out of your mouth. It was going to be through following God and not chasing after the Canaanite ways and not getting entrapped by the world, but simply getting back to just that old-fashioned reality of God, it is you leading me. And that victory in my life is not because I'm strong enough, but because you are. Lord, victory in my life is not because I do not have any issues. We all have problems. And as the Lord illumines that and reveals those problems to us, we lay them down at his feet and we say, Lord, this is my act of worship to you. The things I used to hold on to, I don't want to hold on to them any longer. Lord, bring down these walls. May this be our prayer. Lord, protect me from absorbing this world's values over your plan for me.